Welcome, everyone, on this anniversary of the birth of Joshua Ben Joseph. I guess it would be 2021, his birthday, which number it is. Welcome, everyone, to Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. All right, we are on paper 44, section 1, which is old single column, page 499. 499, yes it is. All right, before we get started, remember we had quite a long haul to get through that preface, which is was very meaty. It was trying to get us spun up to get a context set. Let me just touch on a couple points that were towards the end there. If you let's look at those last two paragraphs of the preface. I just want to read the opening sentences in those again and remind you of what the archangel author was reminding us of, to have definitively in mind before he begins the actual direct task of trying to enlighten us about these seven different groups of celestial artisans. So if you look at that next to the last paragraph there in the preface, he says, "But I almost despair of being able to convey to the material mind the nature of the work of the celestial artisans. I am under the necessity of constantly perverting thought and distorting language in an effort to unfold to the mortal mind the reality of these Marantia transactions and near spirit phenomena." And the reason I want to remind you of that is not because I want to continue to pound you. We'll get plenty of pounding from the archangels as we go forward, reminding us of our lowly origins. But it's very important to, if you're going to open yourself up to some potential of revelation with what we're going to read, and it's why he's stressing this, that he is constantly perverting thought and distorting language. So, as we start reading section one, if your first thought is, "Oh, I understand exactly what's going on here. Yeah, this makes complete sense," are you getting revelation? No, you're getting affirmation. And it's an affirmation of a very lowly fact. It's an affirmation of your perversion and distortion, not something that you're looking for. Right? So no matter how much you might think, I'm pretty sure I know what he's talking about here, remind yourself of that. It's like you do not know what he's talking about here. The literalness of what he's trying to present is beyond our imaginative abilities. And so you want to never let yourself lock on and come to this conclusion that you've reached the destination point. You want to keep yourself constantly open. And in that open state, it's not that you will therein suddenly be able to consciousize the nature of Marantia substance, but you will be open to the potentials that are possible for us to begin to have a slight inkling of. What he's saying is not in any way, shape, or form a description of the goal that he has in mind. It's a perverted and distorted suggestion of a beginning. And we have to try to be open enough to not just get sucked into the twists of that of those distortions, but to somehow, in spite of them, begin to get a more true inkling of what he's hoping that we recognize. Certainly, the point isn't just to have seven sections, each of which are going to have a list of seven items, you know, so that we have categories and subcategories and we memorize the facts of those. Obviously, that's not what it's about. It's not a revelation of fact. There is no such thing. There's disclosure of fact. It's a revelation of truth. He's stressing that up front so that you don't, you know, he's trying to bias you away from what you can immediately seem to get a hold of, to paint it with very unpalatable paint of perverted and distorted, right? So you don't want to hold on to it. You want to somehow be open to something that's greater than what's immediately there. Okay? So that, to stress that. And then the beginning of that last paragraph there in the preface. I can do no more than attempt to sketch a crude parallelism between mortal material activities and the manifold functions of the celestial artisans. If the Arantia races were more advanced in art and other cultural accomplishments, then could I go that much farther in an effort to project the human mind from the things of matter to those of Marantia? It's that last part that I very much wanted to remind you of again. That last part, which is the definition from our perspective of the word art, you know, as they remind you towards the very end of the book, up there in paper 196. Art, true art, is a phenomenon that's trying to project the human mind from the things of matter to those of Marantia. Yeah, and like we mentioned, since there's never been any concept of Marantia substance, how close have we gotten to true art? Now, with the revelation of Marantia substance, and they begin to reflect on what it is, there's the beginning of genuine potential for art. Someone striving to project the human mind from the things of matter to those of Marantia, you know, the things of Marantia. And see, that's, like I said, that's our avenue to art, because we're material beings. Our external world is only material. We don't see spirit substance in the external world, experience it as part of the external world. So we have to start there with the material and go to the Marantia. The celestial artisans, as we've already noticed, and they're going to, you know, we're really going to see as we start reading section one, they're starting with spirit substance and going to Marantia. Okay. So, you know, to think about, you know, you have the two substances, as he said, parallel. You know, he's going to try for the crude parallelism, right? But they are genuinely in parallel, matter and spirit substance, on a plane side by side. And the super additive consequence of the relationship between the two is Marantia substance above them. You know, so in that sense, it's a greater substance. And Marantia is the direct, is the substance that can directly embody harmony. What the celestial artisans are attempting to manifest, to bring forth, the expression not of mere unity, you know, spiritual unity, but of harmony. You know, and that's why, remember why this celestial artisan's paper is in a pair with the previous paper on the constellation level, that full-on Marantia level in the local universe. Now, that fundamental core of the associativity domain. The quality of true associativity is harmony. Right? That's what we're after here. Right? So, we can try to go from the material to Marantxa and have that endeavor be called art. They're starting basically with the other substance, with spirit substance, and going towards Marantxa. But either way, that Marantxa substance that can embody harmony, we want to keep that in mind. And we'll see here in this first paragraph of section one that they use an expression that initially you're trying to figure out how I'm supposed to interpret that. But if you remember that it's fundamentally about Marantxa substance and the harmony that it can embody, then it's straightforward to properly interpret that statement. So let's get into it here and see what the archangel, how successful the archangel has been here relative to our lowly minds.
Number one, the celestial musicians. With the limited range of mortal hearing, you can hardly conceive of Marantxa melodies. There is even a material range of beautiful sound unrecognized by the human sense of hearing, not to mention the inconceivable scope of Marantxa and spirit harmony. Spirit melodies are not material sound waves, but spirit pulsations received by the spirits of celestial personalities. There is a vastness of range and a soul of expression, as well as a grandeur of execution associated with the melody of the spheres that are wholly beyond human comprehension. I have seen millions of enraptured beings held in sublime ecstasy while the melody of the realm rolled in upon the spirit energy of the celestial circuits. These marvelous melodies can be broadcast to the uttermost parts of a universe.
Got a whole bunch of stuff in there, so let's just step through that. Okay, so starting off with, when you read that first sentence, with the limited range of mortal hearing, you can hardly conceive of Marantxa melodies. Your first thought is, oh, are Marantxa and spirit issues somehow kind of linearly part of the audio spectrum that we're familiar with? So they immediately address that. No. So what about that material audio spectrum? There is even a material range of beautiful sound unrecognized by the human sense of hearing. And then they throw in, not to mention the inconceivable scope of Marantxa and spirit harmony. So, right there, a little reminder that, exactly what Marantxa and spirit harmony are is completely beyond our comprehension. It's not just longer wavelengths or shorter wavelengths of jiggling air molecules. And that's all we know about, really, is sound waves, jiggling air molecules. And when I say it that way, that's meant to remind you of just what a crude phenomenon that is, what we call sound. It's just literally jiggling air molecules. Yep.
There is even a material
I'm gonna mention that. Okay. So
if we can't hear it, where's...
No, okay,
right. Wait until we get to
the audience. Okay. All right, so the rest of that, there is even a material range of beautiful sound unrecognized by the human sense of hearing. What are they talking about there? In general, all mammals can hear higher frequencies than humans. I mean, humans, are really kind of have... on the low, the low end of, in terms of the high frequencies relative to all the mammals. It's not just dogs. Mammals in general can, and and sometimes quite a bit higher frequencies than humans. Just your run-of-the-mill simple mammal can. Nothing fancy, you don't need a dolphin or something like that. A gerbil, right? the run-of-the-mill mammal. And the way that works is, humans, you probably are familiar, they kind of just, as a rule of thumb, say humans can hear from 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, 20 kilohertz. That's kind of the rough range of human hearing. So in other words, you have about 10 octaves. Humans can hear over about 10 octaves. There's a lot of mammals that, go up to 3 octaves more, 3 octaves higher. So that's quite significantly higher, 3 more octaves.
And lower?
No, not lower. It basically all has about the same bottom, the ones that go down that low. Humans are pretty much lined up with that bottom. You're around, like when you're talking about octaves, you usually talk about, C. And if you're familiar with, calling, the C's have numbers for the different octaves, you call them C0, C1, C2, C3, C4. C4 is middle C on the piano, et cetera. Okay, and, just think about how we're numbering them there. Normally you don't think about music being below C1, but we can hear a bit below C1, and you can certainly have organ pipes that can make some of those lower frequencies and things. right. Or the piano that goes a little bit further, exactly. Right. But the normally it's from C1 on. The very fact that you're numbering like that is showing you where the low end is. It's basically C0 is the low end, and then it goes up from there. You don't normally do music all the way up to C10. That's getting pretty darn high, but you can hear way up there. Yeah, and see, so that's kind of interesting. You think about that. You normally don't have a zillion lines above the staff to indicate what C you're supposed to play. But they describe that there's a material range of beautiful sound unrecognized by the human sense of hearing. And you go, it's already starting to not be beautiful to me. When it's getting up that high, let alone even higher, 3 more octaves higher, say. That's a little reminder of how subjective this is. If you had a better receiver that wasn't so biased to lower frequencies, there would be beauty and delight in those higher frequencies rather than pain and bleeding ears. Right? Now, just a little reminder, the very fact that they use beautiful there, and if you know what they're talking about, you're going, beautiful, really? How very limited, how very subjective, anything that we have any familiarity with, and hence what the archangel has to work with to get us to somehow be motivated towards what he wants us to reflect upon. All right, so that's what's going on there. Okay, some of those basic facts. So spirit melodies are not material sound waves. So it's when you go from matter to spirit, it's not like you just say, "Well, is it just I have spirit substance and I make waves in it, and that's what music is on high?" No, okay, it's. You notice how they describe it, but spirit pulsations. Okay, so you don't fundamentally have the phenomenon that we're used to thinking of, where we have waves, that we visualize as sinusoidal, continuous waves that we then break up into notes and whatnot. that we modulate in various ways. You just have the spirit energy, and it's dynamic in itself, and then you're modulating that, as opposed to material is not self-animating. You know, matter is not self-animating, or you know, to just think of the random movement of molecules in the air is nothing that you can start with, you know, to make music. It's like, well, instead of having this randomness, let's have this randomness. That's, you know, you need to establish some sort of order, some sort of dynamic order in it, in the matter, and then you play music upon that order that you establish. So, but if you think about it, especially since spirit is unity substance, it's you know, there's a more an innate order to it to begin with. You know, even if you can't figure out exactly what that means, it sounds like it's probably more ordered to talk about unity substance than individuality substance. You know, where you got a whole bunch of parts that obey the second law of thermodynamics are not innately ordered. Right, so there's some, you know, see, what we're supposed to recognize is the basic order, and you know, the basic foundation is already there. You don't have to lay that out first and then play upon that. You just play upon spirit, you know, innately, what it is innately. Okay, and just the basic sort of concept of having notes, having some sort of a sequence of pulses of sound. You know, that is fundamentally there. It's sort of the most rudimentary element of what they're doing relative to spirit energy is having pulsations of its nature in some way. Okay? All right. So there are, quote-unquote, notes. You know, and if there's notes, there's a sequence of notes. There's melody. Right? And so that's why they use the word melody. And then if there's melody, you know, you can put those together simultaneously. You can have harmony. Right? You can combine melodies. Right? So the basic idea is there of music, you know, as we crudely conceive it. All right. Let's see. And then when they say spirit pulsations received by the spirits of celestial personalities, you know, what do they mean by the spirits of? They're talking about, you know, so you have to have some sort of very direct relationship to spirit energy. You have to have a receptor. So this is another reason why, you know, the literalness of what they're talking about here is completely beyond us. I'm not a blob of spirit substance. I'm a blob of matter. You know, I don't have a receptor. Now, I have a very tenuous initial relationship to spirit energy above my mind, above the highest reaches of my mind, which I tend to not very frequently you know, visit, because I'm delighted with material things. Right? So, you know, we just don't have any direct relationship to what's going on. You know, so we have no language, no concept of the experience of, you know, having your spirit energy being impinged upon by some sort of modulated spirit energy that is music. Okay. All right, so that's, but again, you can see it's definitely, they're starting with the spirit substance and going to Maranja. They're going to play upon the unity substance and motivate the experiencer towards harmony, towards synchronization with harmony. So then when they say there is a vastness of range and a soul of expression, you know, well, how am I supposed to interpret soul of expression? You know, we use that word soul quite frequently relative to music. You know, we're talking about soul music? Something with a good thumpa-thumpa to it, you know, or what are we talking about here? You know, soul is made out of Maranja. You know, it's that associativity substance, right? You know, a soul of expression, an embodiment of harmony of expression, right? Think the word harmony, right? And try to move your thoughts as far away from some sternum pounding thing you might call soulful, right? As we'll see towards, you know, as we get into this section a little bit, you know, those who know this section very, very well know how the archangel gets to that issue.
What is Marantia again? What's woven together?
So warp and woof. Think of a woven garment, you know, woven fabric, where there are two fibers at right angles to each other, two sets of fibers at right angles to each other, a warp and a woof, and that Marantia substance is a substance like that, where one set of fibers are material energy fibers and the other set of fibers at right angles to it, orthogonal to it, are spirit energy fibers. And it's woven together into an artificial substance, you know, that your soul is made out of, and that your body throughout the entire local universe career will be made out of Marantia substance. Right, I mean, there's no absolute of Marantia, you know, like there's an absolute of matter, you know, and the absolute spirit and the absolute mind. It's not one of those three that has a quote-unquote naturalness because it's tied back to an absolute at the center of all things. Marantia is a relative construct, you know, and it's an art form. You know, the word artificial is not a negative word. It's actually a very positive word. It's something that only personalities can do. Only personalities can be artistic and can make something artful, artificial.
I don't know.
Yeah?
It has a couple of different connotations in today's world.
But right, and that's very unfortunate.
Well, maybe not.
Well,
I mean, I have artificial hips.
Yeah. You know,
I wish I had natural hips. So, I mean, they do good, but they're also...
But your so-called natural hips are artificial. They were designed, you know, and constructed.
That's what I mean. It's
semantics. See? The reason that artificial takes on a negative form is because we judge it by the crudeness of our ability our crude artistic ability, you know, which is perverted and distorted. So no wonder your artificial hips don't work very well. All of our art, all of our artificial, is perverted and distorted, right? But that doesn't mean that art has to be that way, that artificial has to be. The natural world here is very, very crude compared to the pure artificial worlds of the architectural spheres, right? Take a world where there's nothing natural, quote unquote. You know, it didn't just ball together by gravity and, you know, get carved by water and whatnot.
There's no evolution then either.
Right, there's no evolution either.
How boring is that?
How boring is perfect beauty?
Right. Especially in an evolutionary universe, it's got to be evolution.
Anyway. Well, I mean, yeah, there obviously is a degree of evolution to architectural worlds. I mean, everything isn't static there, right? But see, get the point. You know, challenge our bias. You know, a similar bias to this is I don't believe in God because people's ideas of God are juvenile. Oh, so in other words, juvenile people define reality. That's how you view things. So if a two-year-old doesn't know how to do calculus, therefore calculus doesn't exist. That's your argument. You know, that a primitive human has a primitive notion of God, therefore God either doesn't exist because a primitive God is illogical, or God is primitive.
Right. Well, I can't envision a guy with long beard sitting up there controlling my life.
Right. I mean, it's so ridiculous. It's a rational argument, but it's an illogical argument. Mm-hmm. You know,
but maybe those, logical or illogical, as you well know, a lot of people, it's not that easy for them to break out of that.
Right, because it's sad to record that so few persons have the ability to bring logic, you know, to overlay logical assessment onto their rational thoughts. You know, I mean, that is, there's nothing natural about being able to overlay a logical or a moral or a genuine spiritual assessment upon our subjective experiences and thoughts. And it takes, you have to cultivate that ability.
That's a good way to cultivate that ability. Where do you get to learn
that? Awakening Philosophy 1 and 2.
You guys are always doing this.
Right, I mean, you want to take the light in cultivating reflective thinking, and you need to do definitive things that you know that are motivated towards that, like a seminar called Reawakening Philosophy, or a seminar called Total Deity. These efforts that we're trying to make with Perfecting Horizons to develop reflective thinking. All right. Anyway, back to the points at hand here. All right. So you so there's a vastness of range and a soul of expression. So you see, there's notice how if you think about it, then it's sort of a quantity and a quality, right? As well as a grandeur of execution, the art form, right? I mean, music is artificial. Music is not natural, right? And think about, when we start to get kind of primitive in our thinking and we start to decide, I think that a babbling brook is music. No, it's not. No, it's not. Okay? That's sound, maybe even noise. Right? That's not music.
Sounds like Poirot.
Right?
You like the sound.
Right. The sound can be pleasant, but
it might be inspiring.
But if you start getting confused and thinking that some pleasant natural sound like rain falling is music, like you say, that rain falling is music to my ears, you're corrupting the word music.
Well,
no, it's not. It's pleasant to your adjutant mind, yes. To your second level of meaning, yes, it is. But music doesn't exist on the second level of meaning. As this archangel is going to try to point out to us here. Okay.
I have this feeling that for them to even use the term, supporting what we read prior, but to say that there is a material range, the word range, that there are not material sound waves, but spirit pulsations, for them to use the word pulsations, they're really having to reach really down low.
Right. Think about the word pulsation. It sounds like... Do you suppose that's what the celestial music sounds like? Is
I can make a nice pulsation in that.
Spurts of spirit blobby stuff, Okay?
Right. Well, reality is synthesizing.
That's what I'm saying, perverting thought and distorting language. I mean, but that's why I said what I said about it. Think about how notes, are pulsations of sound. Right, I mean, just take the basic aspect of it, but recognize that when he says that, he's taking the beauty of the phenomenon and describing it as spurts or something, and he's thinking, oh, that is so just disgusting to describe it that way, Okay, but what else can we do?
I got that as a spirit being, totally different than who I am right now. I am going to receive these kinds of melodies in spirit pulsations that will, instead of being heard, but will have some sort of similar reaction to me, that I will get that sort of, harmony and that, enrapturedness and everything that I get now from listening to some good music or something like that. Maybe it's at a whole different level, but because of the fact that the pulsations are different and they react or interact with my spirit being in a different way. So I can sort of even envision that, as the pulsations coming in, that's really, that's a good feeling for me, so to speak, as a spirit being. That's kind of what I got.
Right, but just remember, think about how odd the word pulsation is when spirit is the unity substance. So, to have pulsations is to have individuations. Notes are individuations. See, therein lies the complete distortion of the phenomenon. See, as I said, you don't have spurts of spirit. That's individuality. That's not unity. See, we can't even comprehend exactly. But
he didn't use a good word here.
He used the only word he could because he's trying to relate it to what we understand, a sequence of notes, a sequence of pulsations, you know, which is material music.
Right. So
that's what he's trying to do. That's what I'm saying. Just don't constrain it. This is exactly what I said up front. Don't turn spirit substance into just another type of material substance.
So whether they're pulsations or not, obviously you're saying they're really probably not as we see pulsations.
Right.
But still, as a spirit being, you are receiving this music, whatever you want to call it, in some fashion that way. You're not necessarily listening to it like we listen to it, so to speak.
Well, we're about to see that, you know, there in some ways you are quote-unquote listening to it, but it's more than that. Right? Again, just, you know, we don't have to argue about all these details incessantly. Just appreciate.
We got to get to the truth.
You know that. Well, and that's the problem. Like I said up front, we really can't get to the truth of the celestial artisans. That's, you know, but I almost despair of being able to convey, right? Or just what we were reading right there in the middle of that first paragraph.
So
the grandeur of execution associated with the melody of the spheres that are wholly beyond human comprehension, right? And just allow that to be. Allow this to not be understandable. Can we do that? Humans don't like that state. Humans don't like to leave a giant question mark in front of them. They like to pin things down. So I was saying what I said up front, to just let yourself be open to some sort of subtle suggestion here that is not going to lead to a science of celestial music. What it's going to lead to is some sort of subtle, favorable condition in the upper domains of your mind where you're not trying to impose things so tightly so that your adjuster can do something up there and not have you grab it and twist it like you always want to do. He's trying to get us to stop trying to pin things down. Because when we try to pin down what the adjuster gives us, we grab it and we twist it. And now it's garbage. Can we get to the point where we don't grab things like that anymore? Where we just let them be unknown to us and helpful to us? To just open yourself up to a lot of mystery. All right, and they throw in the melody of the spheres, and we'll see when we get into the list, that's even more definitive. That ancient idea, you know, especially during the Middle Ages, you know, the music of the spheres or the harmony of the spheres, however you translate that into English, that idea. Now here, when they say melody of the spheres, you know, what spheres are they talking about? They're talking about the architectural spheres. Right, you go in all these architectural spheres, and you can hear this music being played or being broadcast to you. Right, yeah, we'll see in a little bit, a little different use of the word spheres. Okay, but anyway, it's wholly, not partly, wholly beyond human comprehension. But something we can kind of understand. So he throws that in. I have seen millions of enraptured beings held in sublime ecstasy, totally blissing out, while the melody of the realm rolled in upon the spirit energy. So you notice that? So this is something a little different than we're used to talking about the communication grid that they lay out, where we think about a material line of energy and a spirit line of energy in parallel, and then the mind energy that then exists between those two plates, you know, of those energy lines. You know, that communication flows through that mind energy. Here, you know, we're literally playing this upon spirit energy. Now, I don't know if it plays upon the spirit lines that are part of that communication grid, or are there separate spirit lines? Remember, they're not allowed to reveal very much at all about those spirit beings that are the parallel, or the spirit controllers, I should say, that are the parallels of the master physical controllers. Remember, they just allude to them a couple times, indirectly. They're not allowed to talk about them very much, but there's this whole other parallel set of beings that are doing all kinds of stuff. The master physical controllers are not just laying out physical lines of energy so that there can be communication grids. They're doing stuff that's just purely material related, physical related. So, you would think logically that those spirit controllers are probably doing a lot of stuff that's just spirit related, separate from the communication things. So, it may be the case that there are conduits, or substrates, that are laid out in a network in the cosmos like this to beam the music of the heavens upon, to play the music of the heavens upon. If you think of some sort of spirit substrate, and that this music is dancing up from that substrate and being communicated, transmitted from point A to point B.
Probably copyrighted too.
Upon the spirit energy of the celestial circuit. See, so, throwing in that circuit so that it actually is a network. We're about to read, in the wake of them saying, these marvelous melodies can be broadcast to the uttermost parts of the universe. Initially, we can broadcast things, AM radio or whatnot. Wait till we reflect on the details of this list of seven, and then try to somehow imagine how that's even possible. How what they're about to describe could be broadcast, like they just said. It seems nonsensical. Okay, so we'll get to that. Why don't you read that little intro line in item number one.
The celestial musicians are occupied with the production of celestial harmony by the manipulation of the following spirit forces. 1. Spiritual sound, spirit current interruptions.
Okay, so to start off with, they're occupied with the production of celestial harmony. So that, like we said, that's the key thing. That's the point of all this, harmony, not unity, harmony. And they're described as spirit forces. Why did they use the word forces rather than energies? Remember how the revelators play upon, generalize our two words, force and energy, where force is a potential for energy, basically, right? Where something that doesn't have a differential is a force, and then when a differential is established, it's an energy. Right? See, so you start with something that doesn't have a musical differential. It's a potential, just a potential. It's a substrate, sort of. It's just a beginning. A potential. It's a force. And then you are going to establish differentials in that. That is the melody. And together the harmony, right? And so it's an energy. Then the music is an energy. It's a differential.
Two things. First one, Chris, is the broadcast on the Marantia Worlds the same thing that we miss out here on Earth since the broadcast blackout?
So this bit about the broadcast. Now we know that we've been cut off from the communication grid. But you have a sort of a question you don't know. Well, what about these circuits? Especially if they're separate from the communication grid, do they link those to mortal worlds? Or do these only go to the architectural worlds? You know, the mortals, you know, even if the circuits weren't cut off, I mean, none of us can experience this music. So, you know, for the mortals, it's pointless, you know, to have this music broadcast to us, right? It's not receivable. But, well, what about the spirit beings that are stationed here? I don't know. Yeah. See, so that's an unanswered question. You can wonder about. There's another question?
Well, the other thing was for me.
Oh, okay.
So when I'm doing clothing design or doing artwork or doing, you know, whatever, as from an artist's perspective, mm-hmm. first thing I need to do is I need to understand, or writing poetry or whatever, I need to understand my medium, need right. to understand my tools,
right.
get my toolbox straight, figure out what variables, what variations, get creative with, you know, repurposing, thinking outside the box and all that. Right. So when you're talking about, you know, music and it's got some different medium and, you know, it's a different medium. And, you know, that all is so exciting because it opens up so much more potential every time. And there's so much super additive potential, and it's way cool. But I was just thinking about that, you know, just not being able to understand specifically what it is or what the potentials are. The exciting part, even without knowing that, from mm-hmm. based on what he's telling us, is mm-hmm. that there's so much more. So don't worry about being bored. There's so much more that we can't even touch on.
Right, yeah, and one of the key things, to see that's crude parallelism that you were discovering, that he's drawing, you recognize in any artistic endeavor, you start with some potential for art. You know, paint, canvas, you know, what have you, block of marble, you know, whatever it is.
Material for artificial hips.
Right, material for artificial hips, whatever, right, right. Stainless steel, what have you. Right, I mean, and see, it's the same way here. Spirit forces and potentials, and in order for you to do any sort of a positive job in this artistic endeavor that you're going to set upon, you have to know the laws of these potentials, of the substances that you're working with. The more you know about the laws of them, the better the product, you know, can potentially be, right? So all of the gazillions of laws of spirit substance, okay, these artists have to be advanced scientists of the laws of spirit substance, you know, all the different, you know, ways this substance works, and the more they know about the science of spirit substance, you know, the better artists they can be. You know, and that's why we could start to be better material artists when we started to become better scientists. You know, as we started to learn more about the science of, you know, paints and stuff like this, you know, we could be better and better artists. Right? So, same thing here. All right, so spiritual sound, spirit current interruptions. Okay, that's even less poetic than pulsations to describe it as current interruptions. You know, like I've got a copper wire and I'm
knife switch.
Yeah, I got a knife switch. Yeah. And I'm interrupting and okay. Yeah, oh, that's beautiful. Maybe we should throw a Jacob's ladder in.
It's a symphony.
You know, I'm being a little facetious here, but the point of how obviously a current interruption, he's thinking, that's all I've got. Okay, that's the only expression I can use. Huh? But the whole point is, even though it isn't literally waves in some medium, so it's a quote-unquote sound, he's trying to point out that one of the seven elements you know, is the closest to an analogy to what we think of as being all of music. See, so instead of sound being it, it's just one of seven. So that should start you off in a very different mode. So harmony here is going to be something a lot more profound than the combining of sound melodies. That would be just a minor element in the harmony. That sort of, you know, sound harmonization. And then on top of it, it's something very, very much fancier than you know, jiggling air molecules. You know, and they're.
Why didn't they use rhythm of some way?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that does create a rhythm, and it this must be closer than rhythm, but it's so crude.
Yeah, and see, and that's a really great that's some great reflective thinking. They start saying, "Well, why didn't they use the word rhythm here?" You know, you'll notice that they don't.
I wonder with pulsations
and,
too. And,
yeah.
Because they use rhythm in the book.
Right, they do. Yeah, yeah. They don't write here, and you know, so maybe you could wonder: is he worried that when he says the word rhythm, that invokes such a thumpa 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 in our heads thought that does an even greater disservice to the beauty of it?
Get us away from our familiar stuff.
Isn't rhythm kind of a super additive, like one of those trigon things? Or, you know, like you have harmony, melody, and rhythm kind of go together. So if you think about it that way, that's more advanced than what they're talking about here. It's a higher concept, sort of.
Well, you can think about it different ways. I mean, just, you know, one of the things you can note, besides it not using the word rhythm, you can, you know, if you hear the word pulsation or interruption, it sounds like physics terms, right? Rather than musical terms like melody, you know, or rhythm, you know. I think maybe that's the point. It's what I was saying. You know, that item number one is dealing with it in a very basic physics way, the laws of the spirit substance. You know, and manipulating it, and just in a very scientific sort of, you know, way. You know, but it will be done. You know, so that the result is musical. You know, whereas throwing the knife switch, you know, on the big, you know, copper wire, you know, is not going to be. Right? But that's what it strikes me is, you know. And if you think about it, I mean, it's like that's where logically you would start. You'd start with just the basic laws of the spirit substance, and you know, and what you can do with it, kind of just in and of itself. All right, number two.
Number two, spiritual light, the control and intensification of the light of the Marantia and spirit realms.
Okay, so here, remember, we. Just like when we talk about material substance, even though the photons, light photons, are physical energy, just like this table is physical energy, we make this distinction. We don't think of them as just two different flavors of the same thing. In normal sort of circumstances, we think of those photons as being the means for linking us physically to this table, so I know it's there. Light is bouncing off of that table and going to my eye. We use that photon as an associative mechanism, the vectorness of it, you know, to put us into relationship. If photons don't bounce off that table, I can't see it. Right? It would be invisible. You know, or at best, if the photons absorbed every photon that landed on it, it would be, you know, flat black. Now, I couldn't see it, but I could see its outline relative to a background that was reflecting things. Right? So, you know, they point out, remember way up at the beginning of the book, that when you're talking about other substances like spirit substance or Maranja substance, there is an analogous light. There is an illumination of things brings the observers into visible, you know, in an analogous way, visible relationship to those objects. You know, you can see a Maranja object because Maranja photons are bouncing off of it and being received experienced by you in some way. And the same way with spirit substance, you know, there's spirit luminosity. Spirit substance will give off, you know, an analogous photon-like vector phenomenon that goes across space, you know, and you can see it glowing from a distance because of that. All right, so so that spirit energy, or you know, Maranja energy too, is also part of this. And they say control and intensification, because you know, photons, you know, this radiant energy is a vector phenomenon, right? I can control its direction, right? Or I could just modify its magnitude. Yeah. Is it dim or bright? It's intensification. So those, I have, you know, knobs I can turn there. So there's the substance and the illumination and radiation of the substances. That's also part of the phenomenon, the music. All right.
Number three, energy impingements, melody produced by the skillful management of the Maranja and spirit energies.
Okay. Now, what's the difference there? Okay. There is. Especially the first one, you've got sort of the immediate substance that you're thinking of like an instrument that you're going to play. You've got some spirit substance that's going to be played as an instrument. But you're in an environment of Maranja and spirit energy as well. It's there for many reasons, not just to be your instrument. But it's there. And you bring that into the symphony. So the environment is played as part of this music. So you skillfully manage that. See, and so energy impingements. See, you know, you have that which is sort of immediate, and then that which is impinging upon the situation, and you don't start by walling the environment off like we a lot of times, you know, we want to make really beautiful music. First thing we do is we build a really tight sound, you know, proof room and wall the environment off. They don't do that. The environment is filled with potentials that they can play into the music. Right? So notice that difference. Okay, so notice with those three, even though this is obviously crude, like he said, in some way, he's saying that there's rough analogs, crude analogs to audio, visual, and tactile. 1, 2, 3. Okay, that three of the seven elements have some sort of crude parallelism to what we think of as audio, visual, and tactile: sound, light, and you know, impingement. You know. Just literally, you know, hitting you, okay, in a tactile way. So, and that has to be. Remember, our senses are downstepped expressions of higher senses. You know, the only difference is our senses, you know, up there are more direct, because everything is more directly mindal. And a lot more of them, right? You hear things in a more direct way rather than jiggling air molecules, hit my eardrum, you know, do all kinds of various things, and finally there's a form in my mind energy system that I experience and I call it a sound, right? It's a very complicated and indirect thing. All of your senses are, you know, I mean, you're actually hearing in your mind. The sense, you know, directly is in the mind, not in your ear, you know, or your nose or your tongue or whatever. Those are just these, you know, input mechanisms. But when you're doing everything, you know, when you're speaking mindily like you are there, you're not having to translate it down into a mouth and a tongue that are moving and making air molecules jiggle. You're not having to downstep it like that and then bring it back up again. You're just going mind to mind all the time and communicating. Like we said, even the conduits, right, are mind energy conduits for the communication grid. The input output interpretation is all just there in the mind energy, so it's all much more direct. So when you think of audiovisual and tactile, don't think of this these Maranchan spirit energies as slapping up against your Maranchan body, you know, and then having some nerve, you know, send some electrical signal. Okay, it's not tactile like that. They're impinging. These are impinging upon your Maranchan mind energy, and you're experiencing that, you know, in a much more direct way. Okay. All right. Then number four.
Color symphonies, melody of Maranchan color tones. This ranks among the highest accomplishments of the celestial musicians.
Okay, so it ranks among the highest accomplishments, which means it's probably about as remote from our comprehension as can be. But he's trying everything he can. I mean, if you know the English language well, you know that when you use the word symphony outside of a music context, it is especially used, you know, or indicative of a color context, a symphony of color. Now, if it's not sound, if it's some other kind of quote-unquote symphony, it's most likely a symphony of color. That word symphony is most used that way outside of a musical context. The archangel knows that. He's trying to use the English language, you know, as artfully as he can. So he purposely uses the word symphony attached to the color there. You know, what does it mean? I mean, sin together and phony sound. You know, you're playing it together. You know, it's a melody of Maranchan color tones. Now, you know, your first thought is, well, okay, when I look at that wall there and I see colors, those are material colors. We know Maranchan substance is a modified, you know, material substance. There's, you know, 100 Maranchan atoms to, you know, in parallel to the 100 material atoms, which seems to suggest that there's Maranchan molecules, you know, in parallel to material molecules, and those colors are molecular colors that I'm seeing on that wall. So apparently, you know, there's something analogous, parallel, that you're playing there. And when they say this ranks among the highest accomplishments of the celestial musicians, see, it's Maranchan color tones, not spiritual color tones. So it's not in the normal, the other modes where you're trying to go from spirit energy up towards the harmony, up towards the Maranchan. You're playing more directly there. So it's not so much a fundamental production of harmony. It's some sort of a harmonic see, upon it, a higher order fact, which must require very, very subtle technique and fine skill to be sort of playing, the 90th harmonic upon, upon the fundamental or something. Seems to me that's kind of what they're getting at there. They're playing with the subtleties more, and so it takes a lot of skill.
Harmonic is a super additive.
Yes, it is, yeah.
And when I think of color tones, now this is bringing it back from what they're trying to do, take us from this basic music language, but color tones are something that helps me expand a little bit of thinking on that, just maybe mere thinking, mm-hmm. is things are called different colors of tones when they have different timbres.
Right, right.
Like the voice of Bob Dylan.
Right.
compared to another voice, right. It's still the same type of instrument, but the voice of Andre Bocelli.
Mm-hmm.
Clear and...
Right.
Or the difference in an oboe with a real thin... compared to a French horn with a big open sound.
Right, and you'll see right after this list of seven, they encourage that. I mean, you bringing it up. I was just going to mention that fact that you also use color about how, the sort of the color of this musical piece, and how we think about different keys, color it differently, and right, these sort of things that start to get into the more subtle aspects of music theory and music description, and we struggle to find ways to quantify it and just, and whatnot. Yeah, he definitely wants you to think along those lines. I didn't start there. I started with a more kind of literal physics sort of thing, because undoubtedly that's there. But he's purposely using the word color because of that association. He wants you to recognize that there's something about this celestial music that has, it's grounded in the physics of Maranscha's substance, but it has some sort of a slight shadow that's cast into our recognition of music, in the fact that we bring in that word color in our description of music too. Yeah, so he's wanting you to make that association, right? And, all right, let's see, anything else there? No, let's go to the next one here.
Five, harmony of associated spirits. The very arrangement and association of different orders of Maranscha and spirit beings produce majestic melodies.
Okay, so... the previous ones, we've been using, energy. We've been thinking, just we've got some stuff and we're playing it. We're using it as raw materials. Now, it's like, well, what about the bodies of beings? They're made out of spirit or Maranscha substance. Potential instruments. Play them into the harmony. And notice they have two things, the very arrangement and association. So in two different ways, you're going to use the bodies of beings in the music. In a passive, basically a passive mode, the very arrangement. So, just think about a simple one. We have item number three, this environmental energy. There's beings in the midst of that environmental energy. That's going to produce, perturbations of that environment, right? So you can just that simple thing that you can picture, rearranging them in the environment is going to alter that environmental energy and play them into it in different ways. So kind of a passive way of using the bodies of beings, and then a more active way, that association, because those beings, bodies are dynamic, especially when you think about self-animating substance, spirit substance. So thinking about them, literally being played off of one another. And you wonder, this brings in all kinds of imaginations, like I have two bodies, if I move them closer, does the frequency go up? You know, if I move away, the frequency, you know, I mean, right, that's what they're wanting you to think. There's some sort of dynamic, see, active way that they're being used too. So in both ways, they're using the bodies of beings as part of the composition.
Number six, melody of thought. The thinking of spiritual thoughts can be so perfected as to burst forth in the melodies of Havona.
Okay, now here's a great example. You know, we've talked about this many times, about how our minds are an open book on high. You know, not only are they an open book, okay, they're going, not only are we, if you come to this concert, are we going to use your body? We're going to use your mind. They're actually going to get your mind in as one of the instruments, if you will, into the composition. Okay? They're going to get you to think certain ways so that your the motions of your mind energy are part of the music. They're going to puppet your thoughts some. See, you know, that whole bit about we communicate mindly and whatnot, and we've talked about how you have to early learn when you get there, you know, etiquette, proper etiquette and stuff, because you can engage people very intimately, very energetically. You don't want to, you know, rape them. You know, so, but there are times when everyone agrees to just kind of being opened up, all right? You are intimately involved, body and mind, in the production of this music.
And for an experience.
Right. And your experiences are part of everyone else's experiences, right? I mean, yeah, they're going to try to get you to think in ways that, you know, that resonate with the whole composition. You know, and you notice how, again, how they're playing off of spirit. They're trying to get, you know, they're going to especially use the upper reaches of your mind energy, of your mind all self, that are, you know, intimately in contact with spirit energy. And so, you know, they're playing that.
You know, I just wanted to, you know, that phrase, art imitates life. This sounds like the more you live, truly live, the better musician you're going to be. I don't know.
Yeah, I
mean, to experience it.
Right. I'm words along that. See, I mean, like we were talking about the word artificial. Right? I mean, there. Think about this is going to help you to develop your mind into a personal living philosophy, and be really living. If in the context of immersed into this musical composition, when my mind flows like that, I have very clear, reflective thoughts. You know, see, they're going to be teaching you how to think better. Oh, and by the way, that'll sound really good to everyone else, too, when you think well. But see, so it works both ways. So obviously, the celestial artisans are going to be very handy for your development. They're going to be used with, you know, reversion directors and whatnot. I mean, you can see the potential for this helping you to develop a well-motioned mind. You know, with being immersed in this whole thing, you have all this catalyst for the mind to flow very properly, and it teaches you how to do that, and then you can do that on your own.
Purpose, the reason for the, I don't remember very good how to say this, I'll try to get it closer to how you put it, but I think it was the purpose for us in the way that this evolutionary universe is because the need of relationship, and that this is partially teaching that
Right. Think about how related you'll be. Right. And again, the whole purpose for the universe is to establish true relationship. It's the only thing that's missing in the concept of the infinite I am. Right, is true relationship. Right. Remember how we were in the previous paper, we were reading about how they're going to slowly work us into relationship with all these other beings to get that full socialization developed. See how parallel this is. See? Again, you can see why these two papers are together. All right, so, and then just, we get it at the end of this section, but you burst forth the melodies of Havona, harmony. Right? They're not trying to get you to manifest a mind that is a spiritual drone tone. Right? They're not trying to get your mind to be a religion. They're trying to get your mind to be a philosophy, a harmony. Right? That harmony of Havona. All right, and then the last one.
7, the music of space. By proper attunement, the melodies of other spheres can be picked up on the universe broadcast circuits.
Wow, now that's mysterious. But does it not give an amazing new literalness to the harmony of the spheres idea, like I was saying at the beginning? Or how about the composition called The Planets by Holst? Wow. Little did he know how literal that is, that the planets are actually brought in. And so rather than imagining an astrological sound for each of the planets and creating a music, you actually bring the planets in themselves. Imagining about what they sound like. You literally bring them in, and the question marks this, brings in. The melodies of other spheres. It just brings up all kinds of questions about, like this planet. So they're saying that this planet could be, and the melody that it produces can be brought into their compositions if they properly attune this broadcast circuit to pick it up. It's like, well, why does this music play melody? I mean, why does this world play music? Sorry. Why does this world play music of its own nature, apparently? Is it because it's encircuited in some way? Do the circuits strum it?
Well, do you think that's what they're saying?
When
the
actual planet.
That the melodies of the planet and they're created on the planet, so to speak?
No, the actual planet.
I really think that?
Yeah.
Well, that seems, maybe it's not the melodies on the planet, but you know what I mean, that are created. Like, my thought was, right?
Yeah.
You pick up stuff that's being played here in another world in a different way.
Notice how it's described, it's the music of space.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I mean, sort of out in space because it's being picked up, whatever.
Right. Hmm. And so.
And proper attunement.
The reason that you know that this was going on is, if you remember back when we read about the master physical controllers, and I think it's up in the beginning of paper 41, wasn't it? Where they were talking about their relationship to the spheres of space. And we had this same thing that came up there, the way they described that as them playing them. That they have this composition that they're doing of managing the physical energy of the universe of universes, and they don't work around or against the spheres, they work with them, that they're part of the orchestration, you know, that's going on. I mean, remember the other thing that leads you to recognize that it's not just about the beings. When you go to Havona, they just mentioned it, the melodies of Havona, are the spheres of the central universe just dirt balls for beings to walk around on? No, the energy pattern of those worlds is just as important to the harmony there as the spirit patterns, the personalities of the beings. The whole point of going to the Supreme is not to go to just a personality, it's to go to a power personality synthesis. The full realization that power is just as important as personality. See, in order to really begin to play the melodies of Havona, you have to bring a pattern in. You have to bring the worlds in. The music in Havona is not just played by the beings on the worlds. The worlds play just as much of the music as the beings do. The world's patterns and play is just as fancy as the beings' pattern and play. If you look at the substance of the eternal sun and you look at the substance of the isle, does one look crude and not fancy and the other the opposite? No, they're indistinguishable. Matter of fact, they'll tell you, you won't even be able to convince yourself that the Isle of Paradise isn't living.
But there's other energies as well being picked up on these broadcast circuits, right? Or other. Right. So that's just one way to pick this up as well. What they're saying.
Right. So that's the whole point, is just to recognize that you have to bring in some sort of resonance of the worlds too, just like you have in the central universe. The resonance of the worlds and the resonance of this of the beings play together in the harmony.
It makes me think of how everything is so upheld down to the ultimate on and beyond. This is not just a haphazard random thing going on out here or anywhere. It is...
It's all one system, one cosmic system. You're trying to make not spiritual music, cosmic music, you know, harmony. So that plays into... Yeah, but obviously the details are, you know, the physics of it all is completely beyond our understanding. But anyway, okay, so let's continue on here and see what they say now about... Now, okay, everyone, take a deep breath because you're about to be humbled.
Assume the position.
Assume the position.
There are over 100,000 different modes of sound, color, and energy manipulation, techniques analogous to the human employment of musical instruments. Your ensembles of dancing undoubtedly represent a crude and grotesque attempt of material creatures to approach the celestial harmony of being placement and personality arrangement. The other five forms of Marantxa melody are unrecognized by the sensory mechanism of material bodies.
Okay. All right. So we just went through seven things, and they're saying at the end there, five of them, you know, it's just, you know, there's nothing even remotely understandable to you about those five. But two of them, you've got something. Okay, notice what they do. So the first one is just item number one, the spiritual sound one. But notice what they did here. They didn't just say sound. They said sound, color, and energy manipulation. So again, they're doing the audio, the visual, and the tactile. But they're saying that, you know, in terms of what you can understand, you can't understand those individually, but appreciate how those three together give you these 100,000 different modes, or over 100,000 different modes, which are analogous to musical instruments. Okay, so, right, so, you know, they're saying you've got sound, you know, and when you think of sound, you think of a musical instrument making a sound. Okay, so, so there's that, but they're very complicated musical instruments, and so there's a lot of different modes. Okay, so there's, so that's, you know, so the one they're talking about there is just item number one, and then the other one is item number five, the harmony of associated spirits. Okay, and before we deal with the put down, you know, the latter part, see, approach the celestial harmony of being placement and personality arrangement. See how there's the two again?
Yeah.
So the more passive one, see the being placement, and then the more active one. And notice how they explain that. And it's appropriate that I'm using the word active. Personalities act, right? See, so it's not just, you know, your actuality, it's your reality. You know, they're actually using the uniqueness of your personality, that influence from eternity that's imposed upon your mindful self, to play into the composition and to interplay. So, for instance, they might use the tension between two personalities. You know, think about how in a musical composition, well, you know, you'll do various things to have tension, you know, in it. So they'll inject some tension, just, and that's just innate. Every personality is absolutely unique. The tension is a given. Every personality has a, every pair of personalities has a tension between them. And then they could bring in super additive things that resolve that tension. See, it could be all kinds of, see, cool things like that they're doing. So they're not only playing your mind, they're playing your personality, they're playing all of you into this. Okay, now, you know, this is one of those examples where they just come right out and use the word grotesque, like I point out often. You know, when he said in the preface, constantly perverting thought and distorting language, you know, what he means there is, when I look at what I've composed, this paper, it looks grotesque to me. I mean, and that's the best I can do with you, because you're just kind of grotesque, and so it's like you. It's pretty harsh stuff. You know, remember, this archangel is a very high being, and when he looks all the way down to the trenches where we are, he's having a hard time thinking beauty. So when he looks at the most elegant, glorious dance composition that we've ever produced, to him it looks crude and grotesque. And only an attempt. All right, okay. So, I mean, here's a great example of what I've said so many times. We have to recognize this, that when we think we are hearing beautiful music, or if we think we have a religious ritual that's beautiful, or whatever it is, or a cathedral construct that's beautiful, or a canyon that's beautiful, or whatever, I mean, we don't know what the word beautiful really means. I mean, what's beauty to us is grotesque to those above us a bit. I mean, we are that crude yet, okay? So there's no fact, really. We don't relate to beauty as a fact yet. We only relate to it as a truth. The fact that we call something beautiful is not because it factually, objectively, to beings on high, is beautiful. We call it beautiful because way up in the higher domains of our mind, it seems to be encouraging us upward from the material to the Maranja. It seems to speak artistically to us. Right? And so we use the word beautiful to describe the experience. But the archangel is trying to remind us, but don't think that you've found the actuality of beauty. You've just experienced the first inkling that there is beauty to be found one day.
The shadow.
You've experienced the shadow, the truth of beauty, but not the fact of beauty. Wait until you experience the fact of beauty. Then you will be amongst millions of enraptured beings held in sublime ecstasy. Right? When you experience the fact of beauty, you think the truth of beauty is cool. Wait till you experience the fact of it. That's what he's trying to get at. And he doesn't mince words. Whenever they want us to really appreciate that, like towards the end of the book again, I've been pointing there with the art, also towards the end of the book, they use the word grotesque in describing our religions. You know, another thing that we find very sublime and transcendent. And they say, no, factually, it's grotesque. Okay? It's like, but, you know, you don't want to label it grotesque. It's like, separate fact from truth. In truth, okay, it's a positive thing. But don't think that in fact it is yet. Don't think that you've arrived at your goal. That the potentials of religion are already existent and they're just to be adopted. You know, they haven't been actualized yet. The potentials are just that, mere potentials. And our initial efforts to actualize the true potentials of religion fall very short. They're grotesque. They're stepping stones. They're beginnings. There's something there in truth, but almost nothing in fact yet. Almost nothing in fact yet. So don't ever be satisfied with your facts right now. Be hungry ever for greater facts. And be hungry for those greater facts because you feel the truth that's flowing through even these lowly, grotesque facts that you can experience right now and that you know right now.
You know how the beings that don't experience, you know, don't originally experience the loneliness that we experience here.
Right.
You know, really want to be able to come to the bottom level in order to be able to experience that span. That breath, and because we can experience the lowliest potentials of expression of music, the very lowest, the most, most ugly, that has such potential in coloring, like, future timbres, future voices, future textures, future colors. Those colors can't, I don't think, occur or ever be expressed unless they had a foundation of having, these knots put into them, the mud specks, the remnants of the mud specks, or whatever it is in there, wonderful, jazz players, unless they had the scarring on them, they couldn't perform and be as amazing as they can be.
Right.
Because of it.
Yeah. So, again, why do we exist? Because when we get up there and experience the facts of beauty, we of all beings will not take that beauty for granted. We will experience it as beautiful in a way that's transcendent of anything that a Lanonandek can experience it as beautiful. Because we we know the contrast. I mean, you know, we often wonder, how could Lucifer think the things that he did and whatnot? You know, we often, you know, ask ourselves this
because
question.
He's seen himself.
See? Because, I mean, he takes too many things for granted. I mean, there's nothing special about any of this stuff, which would be just transcendently special to us. I mean, it's just nothing to him. And so he forgets its significance and goes astray. You know, if spirit substance is something that you stub your toe on when you get up in the morning, do you delight in it or do you curse it? Right? See, I mean, that's the problem. I mean, the things that we're trying to strive for, that we think that would so totally transform us, and then we think, well, those beings that have that, how could they possibly, you know, go astray? Because it's just nothing to them. And for us, we need to turn that around. Like we were talking earlier in this paper, we have to stop taking this matter that we're sitting on and touching and whatnot for granted. It's just as profound as spirit substance. And we need to transform our relationship to what we call the prosaic, and recognize that everything is poetry. There actually isn't anything that's prosaic. The simplest, seemingly most prosaic fact is the most transcendent, poetic thing you can imagine. Like we talked about, the very fact that I can experience the existence of that table in front of me requires deity to link my mind to that matter. Otherwise, there is no matter in my consciousness. All there is mind.
I mean, just deity also holds you up. Right?
I mean, right. I mean, just everything about, you know. And understanding what I'm saying, and just there isn't anything that's prosaic. Everything is so mind-bogglingly, transcendently poetic, it's ridiculous. And the fact that we all get ourselves so down and thinking it's all just darkness and nothing, and no, open your eyes. If you can see things philosophically, everything will come alive, and you will never think that you live in a benighted domain again. You'll be able to actually see that every moment is a divine dispensation. My experiencing of that table is a divine dispensation. It takes deity, quality of which is divinity, to experience it. Everything I do is a divine dispensation. I'm not even remotely separated from the divine. It's intimate with everything I do. Can you see that real universe that only a philosophic mind can see? Or do you get biased off to one endpoint or another in a so-called science or a so-called religion? Make the universe come alive. Yep.
One comment kind of back to what Katie was saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that something about the it's not what we are able to do, but what we strive to do. Yeah. Art feels that way to me, that, you know, as crude and grotesque as it is, there's something valuable in the striving that supports what you're saying.
Yeah, and the more that you can, you know, have the genuine definition of art in front of you in that striving, the more effective that striving will be. I mean, striving is going from somewhere to somewhere else, you know. And if you don't see art as a going from matter to Marantxa, if you just see it as something that's awash in matter, it can't be art. It can't be a striving. You know, you're trying to overcome the limitations of marble. Okay. To bring the upper domain of your mind alive. You know? And an artist can do that. Yeah, and it should take supreme striving, you know? I mean, to be a genuine artist, is going to require the greatest exertion that you can manifest. Because anything short, will be half-hearted and will be unsuccessful. Right? It's not going to get close to Marantia if it's half-hearted. It's going to take effort, struggle, conflict, right? All the way through to progress. All right, let's get to the next paragraph here.
Harmony, the music of the seven levels of melodious association, is the one universal code of spirit communication. Music, such as your rancher mortals understand, attains its highest expression in the schools of Gerasim, the system headquarters, where semi-material beings are taught the harmonies of sound. Mortals do not react to the other forms of Marantia melody and celestial harmony.
Okay, so that last line, again, emphasizing, keeps repeating it, how removed these facts are from us right now. That paragraph ends just like the previous paragraph. The other five forms of Marantia melody are unrecognized by the sensory mechanism of material bodies. And again, that should remind you, what are they talking about with the music of space? And this, are they pulling in our music from this planet into their composition? No, that's recognized by the sensory mechanism. Okay, see, you can see how whatever that item number seven is, it's very transcendent of anything that we currently understand. So here's where, now they're trying to, again, bring in some tempering. We think we understand the word harmony. But remember, all we have is a shadow. And they're saying that really the substance, is there in Marantia. See, and harmony, and then they define it. The music of the seven levels of melodious association. See, so technically, harmony is not achievable here. Harmony is not even achievable, say, with the material sons and daughters, the semi-material beings, on Gerasim. You've got to transcend that even semi-material nature in order to actually get to the substance of harmony. Before that, it's just a shadow. Okay. So again, it's not what we're calling harmony right now is not the fact of harmony, but it might be, if it's true art, it might be the truth of harmony. We can begin to experience the truth of harmony. But again, it's sad to record that so few persons have any beginning discrimination between the fact of fact and the fact of truth. For most people, we can't even define the word truth. Quid est veritas, said Pontius Pilate. Right? And so do we still today. Right, so to get to this point where, when I say the truth of harmony, there's some truth to the truth of harmony there, Or maybe you could even say some fact to the truth of harmony if you want to be there. Some literalness to that. It isn't just delusional truth. And remember what that requires. There has to be some relationship to the upper domain of the hourglass for there to be genuine experiencing of the truth of something, as opposed to, in the lower domain, taking certain facts and calling them truth. Truth is my facts, falsehood is your facts. Which is just completely, ridiculous in so many ways. But to get beyond that, to get beyond thinking that you actually take true and false tests. No, you don't. You take correct and incorrect tests. Those aren't true and false tests. those sorts of recognitions. Yeah, you had something, John?
Well, time and time again in the book they tell you, don't try to crystallize truth. As soon as you think you've got it, there's another one. In other words, it's It's an always ever growing, ever experiencing thing.
And it only exists in the upper domain, you know, as a living phenomenon. If you try to bring it down, you're going to crystallize it.
Right. And, but however, as I find, you know, as you grow, go and grow through the various stages of existence, even as a human being, you know, you do have to latch on to certain things for a period of time. You can't just, you know, it's not always tomorrow, always the future. There are certain things you have to do, you know, to exist as, you know, as a material being.
Right. And does that change on high? No. Remember how they say, even, you know, through your ascension career, they aren't whipping you all the way. You know, many times you have to stop for a while, take a breather, and, you know, kind of just be with something for a while. That's an important part of the growth process. To not, you know, to just kind of let it be for a while. Because there's a limit to how much we can be incessantly challenging everything. It's too much. You know, we won't be able to be incessantly challenging things like that until, you know, we're finaliters.
We miss the trip, yeah. We miss the journey on the way if we do that.
Right. Yeah. So that's an important part of it, of, and, you know, the reversion directors help you with that whole process. And all right, so, anyway, just, you know, quickly, you notice that the jiggling air molecules thing obviously could have a highest expression. You know, the oxygen-nitrogen atmosphere on Gerasim with the highest type of material beings there could obviously produce the highest forms of music like we understand it, jiggling air molecules in really cool ways. Right, so there is a highest level. But see, that's the highest expression is in the schools of Gerasim. That's it. Beyond that, you leave behind that material music where you're trying to take material to Marantxa, you know, and it's all spiritual to Marantxa. All right.
Appreciation of music on your ranch is both physical and spiritual, and your human musicians have done much to elevate musical taste from the barbarous monotony of your early ancestors to the higher levels of sound appreciation. The majority of your ranch immortals react to music so largely with the material muscles and so slightly with the mind and spirit. But there has been a steady improvement in musical appreciation for more than 35,000 years.
At least until 20th century got rolling along. right. You know, so the 3,500 years, I mean, see, obviously they're bringing in our ability to go beyond the primitive is predicated on Adamic uplift, getting that greater relationship to the seventh adjutant so that you can begin to move up out of the lower domain of the hourglass and you know, into a greater relationship in the upper domain. So that it isn't just capping out, you know, the phenomenon of music on the second level of meaning, on the level of the feelings. You know, you can get to the third level because you've been helped by the biologic uplift and on above that. Yeah, Gene.
Well, it's interesting they didn't indicate that at the time of Adam and Eve and their immediate offspring,
yeah,
that there was this great and glorious culture of wonderful music and everything, and that we've come down from there. No, this has been a slow process of coming up.
Right. Again, remember how, you know, the prince and his staff and the Adam and Eve on every world work. They don't come to be revolutionaries. They come to, you know, catalyze evolution. Right. But, you know, if we'd gotten the full biologic uplift, right, we would have had this greater relationship to the seventh adjutant and then hence to cosmic intuition. And musical consciousness. Okay, so, you know, but notice the appreciation of music on your ranch is both physical and spiritual. Okay, but not your ability to produce. We, you know, like I've been saying, we can't do any of this spiritual music, quote unquote, like we've been reading about. But we do, in our highest levels of mind, have some beginning ability to appreciate things beyond the physical. We have stimulus input into the upper domain of the hourglass, not just stimulus input into the lower domain. So appreciation of music, is potentially both. But, as we were just saying, this is one of the things that's a sign of the emergency that's developing on this planet, the fact that it's slipping. And more, we aren't so elevated in musical taste, above the barbarous monotony. More and more, you've got humans, so-called humans, that can listen to doo 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 and think that's beautiful. That sounds beautiful to them, right? See, notice how they say that: elevate the musical taste. Okay, the barbarous monotony sounded beautiful at every stage. It sounds beautiful, and there is a slight truth to it. And like they're pointing out, it has been slowly moving forward, right? Just like initially worshiping rocks is the beginning of religion and truth, but it's not religion in fact yet, okay? There's a truth there, but we're going retrograde. We're going back. Our musical taste is slipping. We are living, if you have a relationship in upper domain of the hourglass, do 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 do. It doesn't sound beautiful, okay. But down on the first level of meaning, that strokes you very well, and you like that. Let's just do this forever. Let's just, why do we need more than two notes? Let's just pound the two of them back and forth.
Plays chopsticks, and it's all gone.
Right? See, that's what he's getting at. So the fact that the steady improvement is slipping, that's part of the emergency. Okay, now here he clarifies a little bit.
Tuneful syncopation represents a transition from the musical monotony of primitive man to the expressionful harmony and meaningful melodies of your later day musicians. These earlier types of rhythm stimulate the reaction of the music-loving sense without entailing the exertion of the higher intellectual powers of harmony appreciation, and thus more generally appeal to immature or spiritually indolent individuals.
Everyone look in the mirror. So you have the monotony, you begin to complexify that with some syncopation, but still.
Syncopation mean again?
Well, you're mixing it up a little bit on
instead of a
straight rhythm, your accents are changing and right. Instead of going ba 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 ba, maybe you go ba 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 ba. It starts small.
I've got that on my. You just downloaded an hour ago.
Okay, but again, notice what he says. These earlier types of rhythm, and see, there's the rhythm, like we were talking about. What do? They stimulate the reaction of the music-loving sense. What is the music-loving sense? The level of the feelings, right? Right. You just have a simple stimulus reaction, stimulus response, right? And you jiggle air molecules that in that boomba boomba way, and you feel it on the second level of meaning, on the level of feelings, your music loving sense, and you're happy, quote unquote. But without entailing the exertion of the higher intellectual powers of harmony appreciation, right? Going up to the third level of meaning and above, where you can genuinely appreciate harmony.
So what is it like when you hear a really good boys choir and, you know, and you and you brings tears to your eyes? It's not a thump-a-thump-a-thump.
Right. So you have only one music-loving sense, the level of the feelings. The question is, how is it being stimulated? Merely from the bottom up and it's the ceiling? Or is the second level of meaning being stimulated from the top down? You know, is it actual art? Is it real music? And has it taken you up? And you've begun to synchronize with higher things. And the only way you can experience those higher things is you feel them. That comes down to the level of the feelings and is felt. But see, the question is, what kind of a feeling is it? A bottom-up feeling or a top-down feeling? Right. But to get that top-down feeling, before you can get that feeling, you have to exert. You know, without entailing the exertion, effort, struggle, conflict. In order to go up the levels, you got to do effort, struggle, conflict. You know, that whole process. It's nothing easy about it. And notice how we more and more we're lazy animals, and we want music that's easy. You know. That without any exertion on our parts, you know, any bringing in any higher intellectual powers, we get that feeling, and we're satisfied.
Harp of Jesus sounded like.
Okay. You know, and who does this appeal to? Well, you know, you could be immature. So we all start out being, getting a positive reaction on just the bottom up to the level of feelings things, because we all start out immature. And maybe you stay there the rest of your life, or you're spiritually indolent, right? Because to relate to the upper domain of the hourglass is not easy. That requires exertion. Truth is not natural. Truth has to be challengingly engaged and synchronized with. Indolent, not pain. Effort, struggle, conflict, the pain of conflict. See, spiritually indolent individuals, they don't like going up to the third level of meaning, where you get that prickly experience of conflict. They stay on the second level of meaning.
Did the choir make you cry because it was painful? Oh, it was a Christmas present.
No, but the reason that you experience this beautiful boys choir, in a chapel, in one of the colleges at Oxford, okay, it's because there's this whole environment you're immersed in, this beautiful stained glass window and this reproduction from the time of the Last Supper and et cetera, and your mind goes up. And you have this motion in the upper domain of your hourglass, and it comes down and it strokes the level of feelings, and it's almost uncontainable. Right. It's so sublime. Right. So, it's possible. But it's sad to record that fewer and fewer people want there to be boys' choirs in those cathedrals. Yeah. All right.
The best music of your ranch is just a fleeting echo of the magnificent strains heard by the celestial associates of your musicians, who left but snatches of these harmonies of Marantia forces on record as the musical melodies of sound harmonics. Spirit Marantia music not infrequently employs all seven modes of expression and reproduction, so that the human mind is tremendously handicapped in any attempt to reduce these melodies of higher spheres to mere notes of musical sound. Such an effort would be something like endeavoring to reproduce the strains of a great orchestra by means of a single music instrument.
The kettle drum.
No. Synthesizer. The whole orchestra on one instrument. So that kind of got me when they said that. They knew.
Yeah, but that's the whole thing. It's not a single instrument, is it? It's a collection of instruments. Yeah. Right.
Well, that's what it says. Be like doing it with one instrument.
Okay. So, notice how they start that out. You know, he's pointing out again this bit about, okay, yes, there's no fact, but there is truth. Sometimes in your very best musicians, there's been definitive truth, near fact, to what they were achieving superconsciously. They were beginning to resonate with their celestial associates. But they perforce had to bring that down. Okay, and so you end up, you know, with just snatches.
Think they knew it?
Of these harmonies of Marantxa forces, okay? Again, it's nothing that can be known. It's just something that's there superconsciously. The archangel is pointing out that the best musicians have touched upon that, and that's why even when they bring it down into the trenches, it has a sublimity that stands out. Okay, from the boompa boompa, right? So that's a neat thing, and that he'll come back to that. The archangel will come back to that at the end of the paper. One of the reasons why it is that there has been some musicians that have begun to touch upon the fact. But didn't just appreciate that, like we were saying, that the literal harmony, the fact of harmony involves those seven elements, and you don't even have them in potential. So you can't literally make the fact of harmony here because you don't have those seven elements. All right, and then we'll wrap it up.
While you have assembled some beautiful melodies on your rancha, you have not progressed musically nearly so far as many of your neighboring planets in Satania. If Adam and Eve had only survived, then would you have had music in reality? But the gift of harmony, so large in their natures, has been so diluted by strains of unmusical tendencies that only once in 1,000 mortal lives is there any great appreciation of harmonics. But be not discouraged. Someday a real musician may appear on your rancho, and whole peoples will be enthralled by the magnificent strains of his melodies. One such human being could forever change the course of a whole nation, even the entire civilized world. It is literally true. Melody has power a whole world to transform. Forever, music will remain the universal language of men, angels, and spirits. Harmony is the speech of Havona.
See, there's that harmony is the speech of Havona that they were alluding to back there in the list, see? Okay, let's just step through these points. Everyone has read that paragraph a million times that's familiar with the revelation. But, stressing that, see, without Adam and Eve upstepping, how much of the seventh adjutant can engage us? There's just definitive limits to how far music can go, because you just really can't get, bring the upper domain of the hourglass really involved in the process. We're kind of just stuck with mere adjutant mind. Notice how they word that. Then would you have had music in reality? The best of our music right now, see, they're saying is you have music in actuality, but then you would have had music in reality. Because again, it's the personalized self of spiritualized mind, the realityized mind that's in the upper domain of the hourglass, right? The actuality is in the lower domain. The reality is in the upper domain. See, so that's what they're getting at, the literalness of that. You would have had music in reality. Again, see how they're wanting you to use the word music, just like they're wanting you to use the word art. If it isn't genuinely bringing in the upper domain, you shouldn't technically call it music. It's just unmusical tendencies of agitant mind. For instance, where do they use rhythm? One place in the book, the rhythmic pulsations of agitant mind, like we measure with EEGs. Right, so if you're just kind of synchronizing with your agitant mind, you make music, it goes bump, 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 like a sine wave in an EEG. You're just, there's just nothing but the sternum pounding of rhythm, beat. Right. So, so they literally describe that as unmusical tendencies, just like so much of so-called art is just that, so-called art. Right? It's not really art. It doesn't take you anywhere towards Marantxa. If anything, it takes you from matter to the dregs of matter. It seems to be oriented in the opposite direction. It's anti-art. Right? And a lot of so-called music is anti-music, too. It doesn't take you from the second level of meaning up, it takes you from the second level of meaning down to the level of the flesh. All right, but then they say, be not discouraged. However, one should notice carefully how the rest of the sentence is worded. We often forget this. It doesn't say someday a real musician will appear on your rancha. It says may. It's because why this book is in my lap. There's an emergency situation, even genetically. Remember, they've gotten permission to try to conserve the higher spiritual types, where genetically there's some relationship to the upper domain of the hourglass.
Did they say the same thing about another John the Baptist? Would they say may on that too? Remember that? John the Baptist.
I don't recall, but...
Interesting.
But just notice, they purposely say may because things are tentative right now. There's not, if the Adamic blood gets too diluted, that potential for that musician goes away. It's not going to be once in a thousand. It's going to be once in an infinite number. It's not going to happen. All right, so... That's just a little reminder you're going to have to not be discouraged. You're going to have to trust that those who are overseeing things and the influences that are being posed upon us are going to be effective to the point where this doesn't all fall apart. All right. So just that little bit of tempering in there. But we can look to... melody has the power a whole world to transform. That is, and just to wrap it up, see those statements at the end, where does that power lie? Does it lie in fact or in truth?
Truth.
See, it lies in truth. We do have the relationship, despite our limited factual nature, to synchronize with truth. And so great things are possible even in this lowly estate. But only if we take delight in cultivating, being something that can be truthful. The more you're a personal living philosophy, the more you have cosmic consciousness, the more you can be that musician. Right? That musician whose magnificent strains, will transform... notice civilized world. It's not going to transform uncivilized world, but it will transform civilized world. That individual will be a personal living philosophy. There will be true science and true religion brought together in that mind. Just like these celestial artisans that need to know about all the physics of spirit substance in order to be the musician they are. He's going to be a master of the triunity. And he will play it like no one has ever played the triunity before. All right, let's wrap it up there and take a moment here.